Today's episode marks the final part of my special Pro Wine 2019 special. But we're going out in style as I sit down with two of the new generation of the Douro Boys. They explain between them the origin story of the Douro Boys. We take a deep dive into modern winemaking in the Douro Valley and speak marketing port to the next generation of wine drinkers. Enjoy.
So, hi Lawrence, thank you so much for taking the time during ProVine to come and visit us at our Douro Boys stand. And I'm sure the name sounds funny, Douro Boys, and I'm a woman making the introduction. So just to briefly explain who the Douro Boys are and why this came about. We grew up, and I'm here with João Aves Ribeiro from Quinta de Valado, and we're the new generation of the Douro, and we grew up seeing a Douro where we were producing port wine in this beautiful region, which is a mountainous area full of different vineyards and olive trees, and there's a beautiful river, obviously, and many different tributary rivers. This was basically our playground growing up. But at the same time, there was a group of men doing some very serious work in changing the way the region and the people who worked in the region for many years and many generations approached the vineyard. So we're talking about the same varieties that have gone into port, the same forms of planting, very traditional practices, but a change of mind where we were looking at that same vineyard, and instead of producing port, a fortified drink, we were producing red wines, still wines. And that change of mentality was a new wave of thinking and put the Douro in the world map. And the way we did it was we would interact. We're friends. We're families that have grown up together and known each other for many years. And so we were exchanging ideas, inviting journalists or clients to get to know our different projects. And this interaction was recorded by one journalist as I saw the Douro through the Douro Boys. And that stuck, the name. We transformed it into a brand and into an idea, which is the promotion of the region and the quality of the wines and the characteristic of the wines, and literally put the name Douro on the map. It's something that did not exist. Portugal, even less so. I think this group of five quintas, we are just the name of the producers are Niport, Quinta do Valado, Quinta do Valmião, Quinta do Crasto, and ourselves at Quinta Valda Ana Maria. To be honest, we're actually the third generation of the Douro Boys, because the first is your grandfather, your grandfather, Jorge Roquette. And so I think we were lucky to see how they've led this change. And we started off with very few wines. Nowadays, you see many more bottles on our tables. In my case in particular, it was really seeing the birth of a quinta, of an estate, where we started off with 10 hectares. There's a lot of diversity, 41 different grape varieties planted in a big field blend. And we've been growing by identifying these single vineyard plots, what makes each little plot unique, and bottling wines. And the style of the Douro is always very complex, full of fruit, full of flowers, but at the same time very silky and very rounded and full-bodied. So it's quite impactful, but at the same time very long-living. And that has set the standard for the quality of the region and of Portuguese wines in general.
Thank you for the introduction, Francisca. I think I'll pick up... I'll try to explain the Douro Boys from a different perspective, which is... looking back at where it all started. The Douro Boys were at ProVine at a huge trade show, a nice big stand, and clearly we've come a long way since where we started. But the Douro Boys started, like Francisca said, the name was given to us, so there was no planning into that. And it started organically as five producers who were all somehow connected to port houses. Or in Niport's case, are still a port house, but five producers, like Francisca said, that started looking at the same vineyards, at the same methods we've had for a couple hundred years, and start finding new ways to use them, to use the same varieties for different wines or the same techniques for port wine, for foot crushing the grapes to make dry reds. But the cool thing was that there was almost no planning behind the Doorboys. It was a natural issue that we identified as the five of us started making dry wines. So we started traveling, going to new wine fairs, so not the traditional port wine places and port wine consumers. And we quickly realized that as a single producer, and I can talk for myself, but I'm sure everyone agrees with what I'm about to say. As a single producer, we travel to, say, the London International Wine Show. And we're in our small corner, one Portuguese producer, surrounded by French, surrounded by Italians. So as a single producer, looking at that, it's almost overwhelming. How can a single Portuguese producer, making something completely different from grapes nobody knows, how can we make an impact? So naturally, the five of us are all either friends or family, so connected personally, not just professionally. So naturally, as we would fly there together from the same airport on the same plane. We would probably all stay at the same hotel. We would all have dinner in the same restaurant together. And we realized that instead of a Portuguese producer going out into Europe or the world and saying, don't drink port wine, drink my dry wine, which has the same grapes, and it's long story, but it's really cool, you're going to like it. It's much easier for the five of us to go to that same place and say, don't drink Spanish wines, try Portuguese wines, try Douro wines. But amongst the five of us, we have a little bit of everything, from whites, reds, big, full-bodied, young ports, old ports. So it started almost organically as a group of friends, but we realized that fun is also a huge part of this business. I mean, we all drink wine. We all have the same side effect coming from it. So the fact that we're just trying to have fun in an informal way has worked very well for us. And looking at where we are today with the amount of wines and the amount of press that we've received is quite rewarding. As an example, there's the two stories that happened this year. I'll tell that one and Dirk. I was at an auction a couple months ago in the US, and they were auctioning off a lot, which included a trip to Portugal, to the Douro. Okay. It was a fairly serious wine auction with very big wines, a very long thing. And when it got to the Portuguese auction, and we were this was halfway through dinner, and there was wine there. So as they started auctioning off the trip to the Douro, we started dancing a little bit and making a little bit of noise, and the trip ended up going for $28,000 for a weekend in the Douro. And this, from where we started, where no one knew us, where through just being friendly and fun and really just having fun, we get to a point where we're at the top. Another similar story. Dirk Nieport, late last year, was in Hong Kong for an auction. Was it through Christie's?
Yes.
And again, through his quirkiness, he sold a single bottle of port wine with his own name through a nice, cool, funky story for just over $100,000. The most expensive port wine bottle ever sold. And again, not in a very serious, not in... not too seriously, just have fun, make good wines, mingle, I would say, is a huge part of our mentality. Between the five of us, all our friends, interconnecting both commercial contacts, personal contacts, we all end up growing and we all end up winning, and basically unity as a whole, as opposed to the five of us going off in different ways.
On the topic of auctions, I think it's also relevant to mention that the Douro Boys have an auction ourselves. So apart from working together in this promotion, the only wine we do together is a very special, unique cuvée. We've launched the first with the harvest of 2005. And we only sold in magnums. That went so well that 5 years later, we did the 2011 Douro DOC and Vintage Port, and we doubled the average price in just 6 years. And this year we're launching the 2017 auction, and this is a one-off opportunity. We do it in the Douro, also through Christie's, and we're doing it in October. And more so the Douro boys and each one of our estates tries to maximize the perception of quality of the region. It's a beautiful region to visit. So I don't think just the wines speak for the beauty and the diversity of it all. But if you have the opportunity to come and visit us, please do. And Quinta do Valado has two amazing hotels where you can stay. Small, so book fast. I never managed to stay there, and I know the guys.
Reservations on www.quintadovalado.com.
See, I promote for you.
I mean, listening to you, you know, both speak there, it's fantastic to hear the stories about the auction and just getting out there and having fun. I think there's a lot to be said for that. And, you know, often people can take wine a bit too seriously, even though it is such a fun thing, you know, at its heart. The one main theme that I picked up from you, hearing you talk there is around essentially the diversification away from fortified wines, and you know, just it just seems to make fantastic business sense. You know, you have multiple products and multiple brands and, you know, multiple income streams at the end of the day. So I'm just curious to ask you to zoom out from that and just to give us a sense of what's happening in the region. Is this a trend that a lot of other wineries are doing and they're diversifying their portfolios as well? Yeah, just kind of give us a sense of that.
So I think we have to go back in time to 1986 when Portugal joined the EU and there was a big reformation of the law. And so in the Douro Valley, we were producing the grapes for the fortified wines, shipping them down to Porto, where they would age, or Porto Gaia, actually, to be more precise, and they would be shipped out around the world. That was a process that happened for dozens of years. In 1986, the law is approved that we can now age the wines in the region. What does that allow? That the people that owned the vineyards could now age the wines at the same time.
Disconnecting away from the port houses where some way or another all producers in the Douro had to be connected, either owned by a port house or selling to a port house. When the law changed, like Francisca said, and we were allowed to age and bottle in the Douro, it allowed for an explosion of small single estate producers where you can grow your own grapes, vinify them, age them, and then market them under your own brands.
And that's obviously an essential opportunity. And then there was a generation that was capable of grabbing that opportunity, also responsible for making the pressure to make this law pass, obviously. So many experiments were being done already in the early 80s of using these grape varieties and fermenting them until the end and making dry wines. A story comes many years later when Dirk Nieport grabs a bottle and blind offers it to everybody. And one of the people present was my father, who tasted the wine and they were going, oh, Châteauneuf du Pape, I don't know, throwing out loads of different regions. And Dirk goes, no, this is yours, Cristiano, and this is something you made back in the 80s at Quinta do Noval that used to belong to my family. And at the time, it was undrinkable when it was made. And 20 years down the line, it was something you could enjoy. Obviously, we've come a long way in that sense. So you want to add something?
Yes. I think that's a pretty, very interesting part where the transition from fortified ports to dry wines was fairly simple in the way that we took the same mentality as ports, the same grapes as ports. So port wine mentality is concentration, tannin, alcohol, and sugar. So picking the grapes very late with vineyards, with very low yields, with very high concentration to make something very big, very powerful that will age for 100 plus years. So the first red wines we made from the Douro were fairly simple in the sense that we picked the same grapes. We thought red wines from the Douro should be the same as port wines, very concentrated, very big. They weren't very good to drink when they're young, and this is a kind way of explaining them. But 40 years later, they were fantastic to drink. So we started in a very simple way using the same wines or the same mentality as ports into red wines. And we thought that would be our thing. A few years later, we realized that it's not very really acceptable to make wines that are undrinkable for the first 20 years. So we started looking at picking earlier. Varieties with higher levels of acidity, with more freshness, not necessarily having wines with 14.5%, 15% alcohol full of residual sugar that need a lot of oak. So from there, we started looking at elegance, early, younger drinking wines. From there, we started looking at white varieties. So the first whites coming from the Douro followed a similar mentality, very big, very oaky, white wines that could be drunk after 50 years but weren't very good when they're young. We started looking at different white varieties, higher acidity, younger levels. So we're at a point now where, and don't take my word for this, in 5 years I might say something completely different. So we're still learning. We're very excited to learn what we can do. We're at a point now where we make very concentrated, high alcohol, fortified ports, big reds, light, high acidity, light alcohol, high acidity whites, fresh rosés. We're now looking at each one of us lower extraction, lower alcohol reds. So really, the universe of the Douro is so huge, and the exciting thing for us is there's so much more. We're still learning 30 or 35 years after. We started really focusing on dry wines. I can't tell you what the next big thing from the Douro is, because it really can be almost anything.
And to give you a general perspective, when we started in the 90s, we were about 7 or 8 per different brands doing different labels. If you walk around here, this is the biggest concentration of Douro producers, and everyone has Douro docks. Side-by-side port. There are even producers that have not produced port. The region as a whole still produces in percentage more port wine than Douro Reds. So in terms of what the grapes are transformed into, we still get more ports coming out of the region. However, port has limitations in what you can actually sell because you're forced to age. So actually exports, which is how we measure our sales, is equivalent. So 50-50 is 50% Douro docks, 50% ports. And in terms of value, we're actually averaging the same value per liter in terms of what we sell. Port has slightly decreased, and red wines have been increasing throughout time. So it's becoming a really, really relevant product for the region, and essential for this new generation. What we're feeling now is that many old farmers, the Douro is still owned by single owners. It's not massively owned by companies. So we are still... the whole industry is still completely dependent on these small producers that own a hectare or less and that sell the grapes. Always how they look at their vineyard is grapes that produce port. But you're never allowed to transform 100% of your vineyard into port. This is the graded letters, where if you have a letter A qualification, you can transform a bigger percentage of your grapes into port. Letter B, letter C. So it has to do with quality, so that the best quality is into port. And that's how they look at their vineyard. So they always have surplus grapes, because you can never transform 100%. What used to initially happen is the surplus grapes used to be transformed into easy drinking wine, red wines at home, or sold off at really, really cheap price. Nowadays, those grapes are valued. And what we're trying to do is slowly trying to tell these farmers, we value your grapes at the same level as port buyers. So please supply us your best fruit, not just the surplus fruit. Supply everything to us. That is a very, very difficult process. The pride is still to sell grapes to port. So we have to do a very close work with these farmers in trying to keep them motivated to sell the grapes to us. We have to offer the same price or above port grapes, which is a much more sustainable way of looking at the region anyway. And working with the next generation, which is who's coming on. A lot of land is actually being abandoned, or they're looking for solution. And we have to step up and be responsible for maintaining these vineyards. Otherwise, we'll come to a point where there's actually no grapes because these vineyards have been left behind. But so Douro docks are actually essential, and wine consumption around the world is increasing in still wines, not necessarily fortified wines in general. So we have a responsibility with our region and with the industry to actually keep upping the bar in the production of the still wines.
It's really very interesting for me to hear this because, you know, I freely admit, you know, I have been very ignorant, and I continue to be very ignorant about a lot of things in Portugal and the you know, the region that you're describing. So I'm happy to learn. I'm happy to share that out there, and it does link me to my final question then, and that's, again, looking to the future. I'm glad to see that you've already mentioned like the younger generations of wine growers and the initiatives that you're putting in place there. I'm curious about the other side of it, so the younger drinkers, you know, people who maybe they never had fortified wine in their life, you know, they maybe don't initially, you know, think straight to Douro, somewhere where they can get you know, quality wine of that kind of label and that description. So I'm just curious, how do you envisage, or how do you believe there's the best way to market to those people? You know, you're the next generation of winemakers. They're the next generation of drinkers. You know, how do you kind of bridge that gap in a marketing sense going forward?
I think one of the main advantages coming from the Douro is that today, and like Francisca said, we are competing with ourselves. So 30 years ago, the last two, three generations, looking at Portugal, all you had was port wine. And you had good port wine, medium port wine, and some bad port wine. The fact that dry wines and ports are now competing, we're competing for the best grapes, we're competing for the best producers, it's means that ultimately there will be less bad, cheap ports, or the surplus wines that Francisca mentioned, and there will be higher quality, older ports, higher quality, averaged priced dry wine. So the fact that we're competing with ourselves, and we do know, looking as a consumer, looking into Portugal, it's not easy. Our grape varieties are complicated. The names are hard to pronounce. But I think that's also the cool thing. We're unique. We're not just about Cabs and Pinots. There's so much more to dive into and learn. It might sound overwhelming because, as I said, strange names. Even with ports, with the Tony Styles and the Ruby families, it's hard to know what's what and how to drink what and where. But we are simplifying. We're competing with ourselves. So more the average quality of both ports and dries are much better. Surplus is not being used as it was once before. And on top of that, Portugal is definitely a hotspot for tourism. Right now, so I would say the best way by far to understand, to get to know how to drink dry wines or port wines, is hop on a flight over to less than 2 hours from London into Porto, spend a weekend in Porto. Your weekend, I promise, will be a very unique experience, gastronomic and on the wine side also. Don't be afraid to come over and learn and have fun with our products and our wines.
I debate myself pretty much a lot with this question. How is it that we can attract a product that is connected to an older drinker, which is port, and vintage port in particular in the UK market, to a younger generation? And what are the values behind port wine that is attractive to the new generation? And I think this new wave of consumers, the millennials and the generations that are coming after that, all look at experience, authenticity, sustainability, storytelling, and port has all of that. We just have to take it away from the old image and bring in all these different characteristics into the product, into the storytelling, into the branding, into the packaging, and attract the new generations like this. Because what the product is, it's actually exciting. You're having a trip through time, through flavors. You're traveling incredible different sensations that you don't generally get with most other drinks. It's a drink that is something in between wine and spirits. And what do young generations like? They like spirits, and they like fruit and sugar. And port has that. Sugar in the best sense. It's not even processed sugar. It's natural sugar from fruit. So port has so many details. And the minute you start diving into it and understanding the blends of port, so the 10, the 20, the 30-year-olds, that you understand that there's this mastery, this alchemy behind the work. And you come to see the dimension of, to get to that particular point, everything that has been put into it. And the experience that you can now have through wine tourism or through visiting Porto, or if you just know a little bit about the product, the minute you drink a glass of it and understand what you're drinking, I think that's what the new generations are looking for. We don't want something cheap and stale off a shelf. We want something beyond that, with much more depth. And I think our generation is very aware of that and is very aware of how to communicate that to the new generation. So I'm not scared of what port can bring to the new consumer. We just have to be aware that we have to attract that consumer without losing the more faithful consumer, if you'd like, or the one that's been buying port for longer, supplying these very original, very unique old tawny ports, you know, 19th century bottlings, and getting these products out. And obviously standing behind one of the best wines ever produced, which is vintage port. We still have an obligation to make that sort of standard of wine. So I'm not afraid, but I think there's a lot of work to be done still.
Thank you so much to Francisca and Zhao for making the time to sit down with me. It was really great to get an insight into the Douro Boys and the wider changes that are taking place in the Douro Valley. Do see below for website and social media handles for the pair, as well as for the Douro Boys. Unfortunately, that marks the end of my special 7-part series covering Pro Wine 2019. It only remains for me to thank all of my guests that have appeared through the episodes. And also a massive thank you to Wine & Partners in Austria, who provided invaluable support in setting up appointments and capturing the moments that I'm sure you've seen across social media. Speaking of which, if you're not already, I would love to have you following with me. I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.